Sixth Canto, Chapter Number 1, Text Number 27. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sa evam vartamana agya mrityukale upastite matim shakara tanaye bale narayana avaye. Sa evam vartamanogyo mrityakala upastite matim chakara tanaye bale narayana avaye. Sa evam vartamanogyo mrityakala upastite matim chakara tanaye bale narayana vaye. Sa evam vartamanogyo mrityakala upastite matim chakara tanaye bale narayana yavaye. Translation of the report by Srila Prabhupada. When the time of death arrived for the foolish Ajamil, he began thinking exclusively of his son Narayan. Report. In the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2.16, Shukadev Goswami says, Etavan samkhya yogyabhyam svadharma paranishtaya jammalabha parapumsam ante narayana smritihi. The highest perfection of human life, achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by acquirement of mystic powers, or by perfect discharge of one's occupational duty, is to remember the personality of Godhead at the end of life. Somehow or other, Ajamil consciously or unconsciously chanted the name of Narayan at the time of death, Ante Narayana Smritihi. And therefore, he became all perfect simply by concentrating his mind on the name of Narayan. It may be also concluded that Ajamil, who was the son of a Brahmin, was accustomed to worshipping Narayan in his youth, because in every Brahmin's house there is worship of Narayan Shila. This system is still present in India. In a rigid Brahmin's house there is Narayana Seva, worship of Narayan. Therefore, although the contaminated Ajamil was calling for his son, he concentrated his mind on the holy name of Narayan. By concentrating his mind on the holy name of Narayan, he remembered the Narayan he had very faithfully worshipped in his youth. In this regard, Srila Shridhar Swami expressed his verdict as follows. Etat chatur upala lanadi shri narayana namocharana mahatmyena tadbhaktir evabhud iti siddhantapayo gitvenapi drishtavyam. According to the bhakti siddhanta, it is to be analyzed that because the Ajamil constantly chanted his son's name, Narayan, he was elevated to the platform of bhakti, although he did not know it. Similarly, Srila Viraraghava Acharya gives his opinion gives this opinion. Evam vartamana sadvija mrityubale upastite sat yogyo narayanakye putra eva matim chakara matim asakt tam akarod ityarata. Although at the time of death he was chanting the name of his son, he nevertheless concentrated his mind upon the holy name of Narayan. Srila Vijayadvajatipta gives a similar opinion. Mrityu kale deha viyoga lakshana kale mrityu sarvadosha papaharasya harer unograhat kale datta jnana lakshane upasthite hridi prakashite tane punna jnane bale panchavarshakalpe pradesha matre narayanatvaye murti visheshe matim smarana smartam chitta chitam chakara bhakchaksmarad charataha. Directly or indirectly, Ajamil factually remembered Narayana at the time of death. Ante Narayana smritihi samagyana timarandasha gananjana shalakaya chakshur un militam yena tasmai shigarave nama. So this is the sublime power of the holy name of God, that simply by chanting the holy names of God, yes, there's some communication necessary.
Yes, I just want to see if you needed a translator.
Oh, okay. Do they need translator?
I just think I understand. You see it?
Yes? All right, so I speak a little slower, it'll make it easier. So, this is the great power of the holy name of God, that even a sinful person, by chance, who chanted the name of the Lord, thinking that he was chanting the name of his son, which indeed he was, but that name of his son also happened to be the name of God. So this is the amazing power of Krishna's holy name. The holy name is, of course, in this Kali Yuga, it is called Yuga Dharma, chanting of the holy name. In the Satya Yuga, the meditational system was practiced of sitting in rigid yoga postures and meditating for many, many thousands and thousands of years. That was the required system in the Satya Yuga. In fact, Valmiki Muni, he achieved perfection by meditating for 60,000 years. Now, who of us here today in Germany can guarantee that we will live for 60 more seconds? I could drop dead while I'm giving this clap. I mean, it'd be a great way to go, actually. I could drop dead right now. So we don't really know when we're going to leave the body. The Kali Yuga, it is such an uncertain age. You never know, you know, walking, you may be on an airplane, the plane crashes, or some terrorist may blow it up, you know, with a bomb, you know, some shoe bomb, you know. You never know. You really don't know. This age is so crazy age. We can die at any time. Untimely death is one of the symptoms of the age of Kali. So we may have an untimely death all of a sudden by surprise. So the meditational yoga system of sitting in the rigid postures, the pranayama, pratyahara, all these things, going up to samadhi is a very, very impractical system in this age. It's really, really impractical. And, you know, there's so many, yoga is a big thing now. In fact, I noticed the new trend now is everybody advertises their own brand of yoga. You know, they have this kind of yoga. They try to say that our kind of yoga is better than the other kind of yoga. It's a competitive thing in advertising, you know. In Austin, there's one studio, they call it yoga. In ISKCON now, we're branding, you know, we're teaching, we call it Atma Yoga. And everyone's got their own little angle on yoga. But we have the real angle, of course. We understand bhakti. But these other yogis, it's a joke. It's really a joke. They don't have any understanding what the yoga system is. They think they can, you know, some people actually think they can become spiritually enlightened in this age by yoga, by sitting in asanas. In fact, one yogi, he was actually saying that there's one yogic pranayama exercise. It's called Kapalbhati pranayama, where all you do is exhale, and then the inhalation comes out as you relax. You just do exhales one after another, exhale, exhale, exhale. And he said that by doing this, you can rid your body of impurities, and also your mind can be freed of impurity just by exhaling. You know, you can purify your consciousness by exhaling your breath. So these are the you know, crazy ideas that people have, that just by doing some physical exercise, you can actually purify your consciousness and achieve spiritual perfection by exhaling, you know, by doing the Kapalbhati pranayama. So this is completely bogus. Completely bogus. That yogic system was actually designed not to bring, it's not that it would bring, take the impurities out of your consciousness, but the idea of that system was to bring the mind under complete, total control, where you had absolute, complete control of your mind. You could make your mind do whatever you wanted it to do. You see? And then at that point, the yogi, according to Patanjali, who's the author of the Yoga Sutras, at that point, the yogi then will fix his mind on Vishnu. You see? And that's how he achieves perfection, by the Narayana Smriti, by remembering God, by fixing the mind on God. That purifies it, not by the you know, the pranayama purifies the mind. It doesn't. So that system is not at all practical, the yogic system. And then in the age after that, the Treta Yuga, then they had these huge yogis. Of course, they had some also going on still in the Dwarpa Yugas. The remnants of the yogis were still going on. Like they had the Rajasuya Yogi. And even to do the Rajasuya Yogi in the Dwapara Yuga, how much wealth is required? In fact, that's how Arjuna became known as Dhananjaya. Arjuna gathered a huge quantity of wealth. Actually, Krishna told him about a place where in previous times they had done this huge yagya. And all the Brahmins would be invited, and the Brahmins would be given so many gifts, golden plates. Just like now, in Kali Yuga, we eat on a paper plate and we throw. You see? But in that time, they would eat on a gold plate one time and throw. So anyway, at this big yagya, the Brahmins were given so many gifts of golden items. And as they were leaving the yagya, they were thinking, this is too heavy a burden. They were just throwing it inside the road. Garbage. Just garbage. Toss it. So Krishna told Arjuna where that place was. So he went there and gathered all the gold. And they used it for the Rajasuya yagya. So anyway, those days, that was the days of yagyas. That was the Treta Yuga. The yagyas, there were yagyic Brahmins who were so expert at chanting mantra that they could take an old cow. This would test the power of their mantra. They could take an old cow, put it into the fire, the sacrificial fire, and by the power of the mantra, that old cow would come out with a young calf's body. The same jiva would just get rejuvenated. Of course, just before the advent of Buddhadev, they were using the descriptions of these yagyas to justify cow killing, which is absolutely ridiculous. So the Treta Yuga, they had these elaborate yagyas with huge quantities of gold and ghee and such expert chanting. They could rejuvenate old animals. And they also had referee Brahmins who would check that every syllable had to be perfectly chanted, otherwise there'd be some adverse effect if there's some mispronunciation. Of course, we're very fortunate in this age. We're not so expert at chanting. I know in Mexico, I heard the Mexican devotees one time visiting in Vrindavan. They were chanting to Lord Jagannath. They were going, Yaya Yaganath, Yaya Yaganath. Because they don't say the J sound. They don't know how to say the J sound, Spanish-speaking people. And I heard that in China they say Krishna, Krishna, instead of Krishna. They say the R like an L. So, and even us, I know, the way we say Krishna is not really, the subtleties are not really all there. So, in this age, even without the perfection of chanting, the expert chanting of mantras, Krishna accepts it. So anyway, that age, that Treta Yuga was there, and they lived for 10,000 years, and they would do these yagyas where Lord Vishnu himself would come. And there was such expertly conducted yagyas, Vishnu himself would come. And then the Dwapara Yuga, elaborate deity worship, just inconceivable opulence in deity worship. Everything just absolutely perfect, strict. So nowadays, you see, even, you know, we find it difficult to bathe the deities every day. You see, or to, make offerings, regular offerings, we find difficulties. So in this day, there's some leniency, especially with Gaura-Nitai worship. There's some leniency there. Because it's very difficult to have, opulent and absolutely, punctual, elaborate, with so many varieties of offerings. That's difficult in this age, COVID. But in this age, the full power to liberate us is invested in the holy names. That if we can simply chant this Hare Krishna mantra, without offense, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, we can achieve all perfection, as confirmed in the Kali Santarana Upanishad. There's no more effective means in this age of Kali than this chanting of Maha Mantra. But even this simple process we find difficult. People complain, why God makes it so hard that we have to chant His name. I guess they want to just get liberated by having sense gratification. You know, I can eat, sleep, mate, and defend and become liberated by sense gratification. But no, we have to do this yagya, the Sankirtan yagya we must perform now. We can't do the yoga, we can't do the elaborate yagyas. We can't do a very, very high standard of deity worship. All right, that's excused. But now we have to do the Sankirtan Yajna with great determination, with great enthusiasm. You see, with great intensity of consciousness, we have to do the Sankirtan Yajna, hearing and chanting, congregationally hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. That is, we cannot neglect this. And our individual chanting also, we must be very, very mindful and fixed in our regular chanting of our japa. So, these things we have to do. And this is a very merciful age. The great sages actually worship this Kali Yuga as the most fortunate age. Even though it appears the most unfortunate age, still, actually, it is the most fortunate age because it is so easy to become Krishna conscious, to become a pure devotee in this age. So easy then. But even this easy process, we're thinking, oh, why the Lord has made it so difficult for us. So whatever, we may think it's too difficult to strictly follow the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, we have to just beat our minds with shoes 100 times in the morning and 100 times in the evening on broomstick. If we think that what Prabhupada has given us is too difficult, it's actually not difficult. Prabhupada said it is simply recreation, susukam. So we're thinking it's too difficult. Well, you know, we have some psychological problems. Need to go to a Vedic psychologist. If we're thinking this simple process is too difficult, because all we have to do is remember Krishna at the time of death. We'll say, well, that's great. It's that easy. Well, I don't need to worry about chanting rounds. I don't have to get up for Mangal Arti. I don't have to attend Bhagavatam class. I'm just going to make a mental note, write it down in my day timer, the time of death, I have to remember Krishna. You know? I'm just going to watch videos, and, you know, go to bars, and go to the cinema, and, you know, just cruise around, make a little money, have some sense of gratification. But keep that note always there on my mirror, you know, my bathroom mirror. Always make sure to chant Hare Krishna at the time of death. You know, smoke some marijuana, you know, have a few girlfriends here and there, you know, kind of have some fun. Just make sure I remember Krishna at the time of death. Well, guess what? The consciousness that will come to us at the time of death is nothing more than the sum total of the consciousness we cultivated moment by moment by moment throughout our entire life. You can't fake it at the last moment. You cannot fake it. Whatever you've cultivated, that's what you will get. So, are we cultivating the right consciousness right now? That's something we have to ask ourselves. We have to be introspective. Krishna consciousness means you have to be introspective, which means you have to inspect your within. Intro means interior, being inspective of your heart. You have to inspect your own consciousness. You have to look at it. What am I thinking about right now? Am I Krishna conscious or not? That's being introspective. Always looking at your mind, your consciousness. Am I Krishna conscious right now? Or is my mind off the track? You see? Sometimes the devotees, if we're in the association of devotees, the devotees can see the Ramaya, they'll point it out to us. But we have to be our own policemen. We have to be able to police ourselves and not always depend on other devotees to tell us when we're not properly fixed in Krishna consciousness. We have to learn how to be our own guru in that sense. That person who corrects us. We have to be able to say, okay, you're not fixed in Krishna consciousness right now. Now get your mind back on track. Get it right back on track. The easiest way is just to beg Krishna, because, you know, we're very weak compared to this material nature. Daivihyesha gunamayi mama maya dharatya mameyaviye prapadyante mayamvetam tanantite. This divine energy of mine, Krishna says, referring to the material nature, actually. He says divine because it's also his energy. He says it's very difficult to overcome. So we just try on our own, as I'm going to be a powerful yogi, I will just keep my mind fixed on Krishna by my own power. Well, it will be very difficult to do that. Very difficult. In fact, it will not be possible. The yogis who mechanically control their minds, they fall down. Unless they become overcoated with bhakti, they eventually fall by the wayside, like Vishwamitra Muni did. They fall by the wayside. The only way we can really keep our minds under control is to beg Krishna, to beg Guru, you see, to beg the Acharyas, to please help us. As Prabhupada said in Boston, I'm always praying to Krishna that I will not fall down. You see? If I'm thinking, oh, I'm very advanced devotee now, you know, I've been around a long time, I'm well respected in ISKCON, and I got some position, some respect, so yeah, I'll never fall down. Look out, that's a big danger right there. If I start to think, well, I'm never going to fall down because, you know, I'm well respected, I've been around a long time. There's an old saying in America, the pioneers were heading west for Shishi Gonitai Ki Jai. The pioneers were heading westward, and though the American Indians were there, their territory was being overtaken by these Europeans, European settlers, and they weren't very happy about it. So they did everything they could to hold back the influx of, you know, the Europeans to take over their Indian territory. So there's an old saying that when you don't see the Indians, that's when you have to worry. Because they're hiding over the next ridge, ready to, you know, come over and with their flaming arrows to you know, to burn your wagon train to the ground and kill everyone. And you can't see them. That's when you got to worry. So if we think that we're immune to the attack of Maya, that now I'm sufficiently advanced, there's no way I can fall down. Then that's when we have to start really worrying. I always feel that I'm very weak, I'm very tiny, I'm very insignificant, and I'm simply dependent on the mercy of Guru and Krishna to save me, then you're in a strong position. Then you're strong. See? You're a very strong position. So you always feel weak. In fact, Christ confirms this. He says, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." You see? That devotee who feels very weak and dependent totally on the mercy of Guru and Krishna, he's powerful, very powerful. So, what for a devotee, what is his interest in power? Well, we have two interests in power. The first thing is we want to be powerful enough to keep our mind fixed. We want enough power to keep our mind fixed in Krishna consciousness, so we'll be saved. And then also we want to have Shakti for spreading Krishna consciousness. You see? Because around us, everyone is suffering. Everyone is suffering. The whole world is going down to the animal kingdom. Because they're all living like animals. So devotee not only wants the power that he can go back to Godhead, he begs Krishna for the power to save others. Because he's compassionate. He cannot stand to see other people suffering. So, we're very fortunate in this Nama Sankirtan movement that there is unlimited spiritual power available to save each and every one of us and to save the fallen conditioned souls in this age of Kali. We simply have to tap into that power which is fully available in the pure recitation of the holy names of God. Simply have to tap into that power. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
The verse that we were reading today in the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, and Ajamil chanting the name of Narayan,
yes,
calling out his son.
Yes.
So, where would it? Is it in mode of goodness, or is it pure devotion, or how it is?
The question is, what mode was he chanting in? That's what you're saying. Well, there's some mention of this in the purport. One statement of Srila Prabhupada is, although the contaminated Ajamil, he is considered contaminated. He obviously is contaminated. Sinful person. He became all perfect. So somehow or other, the contaminated person became all perfect by concentrating his mind on the name of Narayan. So, the quality of his chanting actually went through a transformation. by the power of the name. That's the reality. His contaminated chanting became pure chanting, obviously. And that's actually the system for all of us. There's three stages of chanting. There's the contaminated stage, the clearing stage, and then the pure stage. So by the power of the name, the chanter, if he persists in the practice of chanting, and he carefully follows the instructions of the spiritual master and the scriptures, then the aspiring devotee becomes transformed from a contaminated chanter into a pure chanter. So his chanting was impure and it became pure. Any other questions? Mm-hmm.
How did we were talking about the morning program, and
mm-hmm.
I think about Prabhupada's schedule up until he really got sick. Whenever he was always somehow there for Bhagavatam class, every day the morning walk,
mm-hmm.
every day Mangal Arati.
Very regulated.
Yet he was obviously a busy man.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he was working very hard, but it's a matter of prioritization. You see? That's a very good point. We just have to, put it down. There's a buzzword nowadays in the corporate world, time management. You just have to make it part of your time management thing. Understand the importance of good morning sadhana. And just include it in your time management, that's all. Just like, a businessman who wants to make a lot of money, he disciplines himself very carefully that his business is, maximizing itself moment by moment. That all his employees are maximized, that they're not wasting his money by frivolously, abusing their time on the job. In so many ways, he's maximizing the operations of his company. So if he's also a devotee, then he will, at the same time he's doing those business activities, he will include strong morning sadhana in his time management routine for the day. He'll take rest at a certain time so that he can get up in time for the morning program. He will adjust things if there's some difficulty, he's too drowsy. He'll do whatever it takes, just like he's maximizing his business for the most possible profit. He will also maximize his sadhana for the most possible spiritual profit. It's a matter of intelligence. If I understand that my degree of purity or impurity will either liberate me or keep me here, then I will obviously want to do something to have a very solid purification session every day. We have to be tuned into Krishna. So our morning sadhana time is a time that we get tuned into Krishna. You may say, well, I'm doing my service, so it doesn't really matter. I'm doing my service effectively, and devotees like me. They say that I'm nice, but that's not enough. Just to get your service done and be well-respected in the temple is not enough. One Gaurabhadra told me, he said, Sankarshan Prabhu, you're a nice devotee. I said, nice is not good enough. See, considered nice in the amongst the devotees will not liberate you from the cycle of birth and death. It's sattva. That's nice that you're considered nice. I mean, we want everyone to be nice and considered nice. But that's the mode of goodness. That is not enough to liberate us. To become liberated, we have to purify. Our consciousness has to be finely tuned in to Krishna. So the morning program is the time of day when we fine-tune our consciousness. Mangal Arati, Tulsi worship. Why did Prabhupada introduce these things? some Hindu ritual? Is he starting a Hindu movement? No way. These activities, Mangalarti, Tulsi worship, Guru Puja, greeting the deities, Bhagavatam class, these are essential items of bhakti given by Rupa Goswami. These are essential items. Without these items, we will not be sufficiently purified to go back to Godhead. You may say, well, time, place, and circumstance. Well, there are extenuating circumstances, but they should be minimized as much as possible. As much as possible. We should work very, very hard to minimize. Sometimes it's a practicality issue. Just like when I was years ago, I first became house sitter. I was working, job. So, yeah, I couldn't go to Tulsi worship, actually. I think I had to miss Tulsi worship. Because I went to work, my job started at 11 o'clock at night, and I got off work at 8 in the morning. So I came to Mangalarti on my lunch break. So I'd have to, I could go to Mangalarti on my lunch break, but I definitely missed the greeting of the deities and Guru Puja, because, you know, that was, you know, I only had an hour, they gave me an hour for lunch. It was just enough time to drive to the temple, attend Mangalarti, and then drive back to work. So that was my lunch break every day, was Mangalarti. So obviously there's sometimes extenuating circumstances, but, you know, I took advantage that I'm going to go to Mangalarti. You know, I'm going to go to Mangalarti. So I did that every day. I drove home, drove back to the temple, went to Mangalarti every day, even when I was working in the middle of the night. So the point is, Krishna sees the sincerity. Everyone should do their level best, even if there's an extenuating circumstance, to attend all the programs. And then Krishna sees. And he rewards us. Ye yata mang prapadyante tangs tatai vibhajamyam. When he sees we're making that sincere endeavor, then he rewards us. What's the reward? He gives us himself. He gives himself to us. Any other question? Did that answer you?
Yeah. Doesn't he reward the time so we can make it?
That's another point. Many people write me letters. They say I just don't. Well, sometimes it's actually humorous, you know. Someone told me, I don't have time to chant 16 rounds. This is not, I can't do it. I cannot do it. I don't have enough time in the day. You have to go to work, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, give me your schedule. Give me your daily schedule. And it turned out he was coming home and watching television for 2 hours every night in the evening. You know, social time with friends and family, you know. That was more important than chanting 16 rounds. So I had to tell him, well, you know, you can, that part can be eliminated. You know, you can take rest early and get up. So, if someone actually is in a position where they really have a difficult time to, it's not really practical right now for them to do something, then the key is this. Every spare minute that you have available, if you use that for Krishna, then Krishna will take note of this. You know, this person is using every spare minute for me. Now let me give him more free time. You see? And more free time. When I was caught up in working a karmi job, I was using every spare minute. And even my lunch break, I would come back to the temple to go to Mangalarti. Every spare minute. And then Krishna saw my determination, and he gave me... He freed me up from having to work karmi job. So the point is, whatever our situation is in right now, use every spare minute we can exclusively for Krishna. Don't waste it in sense gratification. And then Krishna will see, oh, whatever I'm giving, you're using it for me, now let me give him more and more and more and more and more. So in this way, Krishna can make all arrangements. He's controlling everything. He's absolutely controlling the whole world. He can make every possible arrangement, even beyond what we can conceive he can arrange. He can arrange it. All we have to do is put our full faith in Him and dedicate every minute to Him, of our thoughts, our words, and our activities. So, any other point? Question? Yes?
I think a lot of people, if they have children, you know, that seems to be their whole time has to be for the children. So, and if somebody is a householder without children, or a sannyasi who's never had a wife and children, how would they be able to give advice to somebody who's in a situation they're not experienced with?
Yes, those who have children may think, well, those who have children really don't understand this, so, you know, they're fanatics. They don't really understand. But we've actually seen that children are the greatest opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. They are not an impediment for advancing in Krishna. Actually, children are the greatest blessing for advancing in Krishna consciousness. Now, I'm not encouraging those who don't have brahmacharya to run out and get married now or something like that, but I'm saying this is to encourage those who have children. Because a child means now the parent has to become acharya. That is the duty given in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. So I have seen, for example, my disciple Abhay Charan in Austin. He is a father with a son. So he is absolutely engaging his son in everything. It's not that the child is an impediment, well, I got to take care of my child. No, he engages his son in doing devotional activities together with him. At every minute. When he's a little baby, the father comes in, he offers his obeisances, he's holding his son, and the baby offering obeisances with him. And then to pass the giwik, he holds the son's hand in his hand with the giwik in the son's hand. So the son is, the father and the son is a combined team, are passing around the giwik. So the little boy is learning how to offer the giwik to everyone. And then when the father goes into the kitchen to cut vegetables, it's not that the son is a problem, you know, put him somewhere and then, no, he brings the son into the kitchen and gives him a little plastic knife so he can also cut vegetables at the same time. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but the father engages the son in doing all the devotional activities with him. They do everything together, so for the son, it's a recreation. Devotional service becomes a recreation. Just like in the material world, the father, you know, takes the son and they play baseball together, you know, something like that. To bond, you know, father and son bond by, you know, throwing the ball back and forth, you know. So, Abhay Charan Prabhu, he's bonding with his son by, they do bhakti together. So the father, you know, so now the son and so this little 3-year-old boy, now he's doing everything. When they make up my plate at the Sunday feast, this little 3-year-old boy will make up my plate, or he'll watch the father and say, "Oh, you forgot that. You forgot the sweet rice." He'll be telling the father. So we see that actually it's a lot of work. Abhay Charan has to work very hard. You know. Sometimes a little boy will just play, you know, you sit on the father's back and he's offering his obeisances and it's a lot of work. And you get somebody, you're trying to offer obeisances, you get somebody on your shoulders clowning around a little bit, you know. So it's hard work. But he works very hard because he loves his son very much, and the son is becoming very, very fixed in Krishna consciousness. It's not that the children now we have to take care of the children on this side and the other side on this side. No. And he engages his son in doing everything side by side with him. They do the sadhana together. So this boy is becoming a very advanced devotee, even at the age of 3 years old. Very advanced. He's learning so many mantras. You say, Vanchakavpatarubhyascha kripasan. He learns mantras, everything. But his father has to work very hard. Very hard. It's not easy. Children drain your energy, isn't it? They drain your energy. They're always, you know, demanding your energy 24 hours a day. So you have to take that energy and bring them with you and do sadhana together. And that is, I'm seeing that practically. I'm seeing how it's being done. Now for 3 years I watched him with his son. So granted, I never had any children, but I'm seeing how my disciple is raising his son and working very hard, and it's very practical. Very practical. Children can be the greatest blessing if you take your responsibility that now I have to be an acharya for this child. I have to be an acharya. It's like the spiritual master has to become an acharya for his disciples. The father and the mother have to be acharyas for the children. If they take that very seriously, then they will, by dint of that responsibility that they've taken, they will advance very quickly, and their children will also advance very quickly in Krishna consciousness. I'm seeing it practically. You can meet a Bhaicharan sometime and see what you think about him and his son. If I'm speaking, if I'm making this up or it's real. You can meet him in Austin sometime.
Someone may think that he may be of a special category, carry on from the past, but not all children will be the same way.
Yeah, well, you could say it's his karma. You know, he comes from a pious Hindu family, and you know, there's some karmic things there. But you know, make the best use of whatever you got. Really, is the bottom line. Thing is, Krishna says, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. You know? No, there are always extenuating circumstances, but the idea is that, you know, we have to try our level best.
From my side, I can comment?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it depends on the parents. You cannot chat and say that someone didn't have the child, but we have seen many parents who have the children. It depends on the parent, because child is being molded, conditioned at that age.
Yeah,
it's not that he's coming with preconception. There may be something carry on from the past birth, but he's being molded. Even though the children coming from many past lives, many times, whatever you feed him, that's what he's going to learn.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, that's what he's going to learn. What you're going to teach him, that's what he's going to learn. So it mostly depends on the parents.
Yeah, you have to be a guru. You really have to be a guru to your children. That's the key. You have to become pure and perfect as far as possible in everything that you do. Your attitude, your words, and your actions have to be exemplary. And if one does that, then the children will pick up on the saintly qualities they see in the parents, and they will naturally become Krishna conscious. It's not easy. It's easy to say. It's no doubt. You know, definitely easy to say, and much more difficult to execute. No argument on that point. But we have to say, because it's a fact. We have to say, because it's a fact. If the parent is an ideal example of Krishna consciousness and engages the child along with him, step by step by step, never leaving the child, well, I'm going to do my sadhana now and let the child just, you know, float around the universe for a while I do my, while I go to the temple and do, no. You have to be on call as the caretaker of that child every minute. Attend. For year after year after year. You are the spouse, the other half. To take that responsibility to keep the children always fixed in Krishna consciousness. Any other points? Time. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.